The Anton Savage Show Saturday
with Nifty Business on News Talk.
The demise of conversation has long been sort of prophesied that in the modern social media era that we are finding new and innovative ways of communicating all the time. But there's a man who is part of a series of books called Do X, as in Do Improvise, Do Pause, and now Do Conversation. It was released this week and it gives a guide on how to actually be a half-decent conversationalist. The author is Robert Point. And Robert, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very well indeed.
I'm not sure that's an appropriate place to say. Maybe I should begin with, what's your favourite colour?
Favourite colour? Yellow.
So do you believe, and I assume it is the core premise of the book, that many people are poor conversationalists?
Actually, no, Anton, quite the opposite. I think we're all actually very good at it, but we think we're poor. And what I'd like to do is encourage people to realise that this is an incredibly complex and difficult skill that we can all do. We could all get better at it. But a lot of what limits us is our belief that we're not so good at it and our nervousness and our anxiety around it.
The nervousness and anxiety is what? That we become self-focused and worry about how we're being perceived?
I think so. I think there's a long history of this. I think if you go back to the 17th and 18th centuries, conversation was sort of judged to be a form of art. And there were long conversations about who were the best conversationalists in the coffee houses in London or Paris. And so I think people feel unconsciously that their job is somehow to perform, to get stuff across in a very particular way, that there's a right way of doing it, that they should be clever and funny and often witty about things. And it can feel like that. And some conversations do go that way. But most of it need not be like that.
There is also, I suspect, a sense that it is a function of fate, destiny or God, that you're either able to do it or you're not. It's evident from reading the book, you see it much more as a learned skill.
I think so, yeah. And I'm still learning. Goodness me. Writing the book and then thinking about it for these kinds of chats has made me learn a huge amount more. So yeah, I think, I mean, some of us take to it more naturally than others. But I think like most things in life, whatever you're given, you can still work on it and improve it.
The improving of it then, give us the breakdown of top tips for how to be a good conversationalist.
Well, I had a lot of thoughts about this because if you go online, you'll find thousands and thousands of tips. And in some ways, they're unsatisfactory because often they'll suggest particular things to say at particular moments. And of course, it's such a complex thing. It depends who you're talking to, for what purpose, in what context. So where I sort of ended up was thinking of what I've ended up calling maxims and mantras, which are thought-provoking questions or practices that you can return to. And some of them are crashingly obvious. I come up with 20, and there's nothing scientific about that. And they don't constitute a step-by-step model. They're there for you to kind of pick and choose which one seems interesting or useful for you in that moment to work on. So the first most crashingly obvious one is don't avoid conversations, have them. And I think a lot of the time we will turn and look at our phone or perhaps not say something to the person next to us on the platform or in the taxi. And that's one that I've been using myself, actually. So just recently I was in America. I had to take a taxi to a meeting there and back again. And on the way there, I tried to start a conversation with the taxi driver, both female taxi drivers. And she wasn't interested, so that was fine. It doesn't always work. But on the way back, simply by asking somebody how long they'd lived in Portland, which is the city I was in, and where they came from before, we ended up in a fascinating conversation. This woman had been a U.S. naval officer. She'd lived in Portland for 9 years. And before that, she'd been in Japan, and her children were in what they call an immersion school in Portland, being educated in Japanese. And we ended up sitting outside my destination for about 5 minutes because both neither of us wanted to end the conversation. So I think that's one example. There were about 20, as I said, but another one which I think is quite interesting is just the idea that actually if often we struggle to think of the right thing to say, and of course there's never a perfectly right thing to say, but we get anxious around words, some people obviously more than others. So another thing that I think is really interesting is to recognize and understand the conversation is a physical skill as well. You can start in your body. You can think about your breathing. You can notice your seat on the chair if you're sitting or your feet on the floor to bring you into the present moment. And actually, if you start with your body, that tends to relax you, open you up, makes you more available to other people, and that can have an effect on the conversation.
to some extent, does it not become exhausting? Because it sounds like something you have to put a lot of effort into.
Yeah. Well, I think like all things that you practice, it's harder at first. So when you're trying something new and trying something different, you know, one's first efforts are normally full of effort and sometimes somewhat clumsy. But actually, as I said at the beginning, I think we all do know how to do this. We've all been in great and pleasing conversations of some kind at some point. So really, we're building on a capacity that we're perhaps not aware that we have. So I don't think it takes as much effort as all of that. And the other thing is not to expect every conversation to be a glorious, flowing, huge one. Sometimes our transactions are just prosaic. Sometimes we just want to get a coffee. Sometimes we don't need to have a whole conversation. So you don't need to do it everywhere all the time. And actually, I think for me at least, I think the opposite is almost true, that when I have a great conversation, I actually leave it feeling energized, feeling encouraged, feeling more positive. I think of conversation really as sort of like jazz more than as a sort of Q&A, where we're creating something together, more than one person, sometimes two, sometimes more. And we're weaving a kind of fabric and discovering new things. I think that's exciting. I think that's something that we kind of do.
That was a premise within the book that I found interesting, because the difficulty that I face is I have either of two settings in social interactions. I either have, yeah, I'm not speaking at all, or I'm interviewing you at great length. The middle distance of we are jointly engaged in something that might create a greater than the sum of the two parts. That was intriguing to me, that you believe that the idea of a conversation is not that you understand the other person, but that through the interaction, you both arrive somewhere unexpected.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think that it's complex, so that, you know, along the way, if you will probably understand something about the other person. But I don't think it's simpler. Conversation for me isn't simply a question of turn-taking and the transmission of information. And I think it's often talked about as if it were that. I think conversation, as I see it, is there's something much more interesting happening, which, as you say, sits somewhere between an interview and a kind of silent exchange, you know, the kind of exchange you're talking about. I think it's importantly different from an interview. And I think sometimes we're creative, we might be working together, we might be creating ideas or new things to work upon. Sometimes we might be weaving the fabric of our family or creating the identity of our family by talking together and discovering things about what we each care about. So it's not that communication isn't part of it, but I think there's more to it than that.
The other one that you are interesting about is you, in the list of things that you recommend to people, you say, listen with your body and to your body.
Yes. So I think what's really interesting, I've been doing kind of workshops around this for many, many years with leaders. And I think one of the invitations I give to people most often is to pay attention to the perceptions, the feelings that are arising inside of you. And that might be tension. You might feel tension in your jaw or your neck or sinking feeling in your stomach, or it might be a feeling of kind of dullness or fizziness. And what I notice as I talk to people about this is most people don't pay very much attention to what's going on in their body. And that's understandable because we're educated not to. We're taught that it's our thoughts and our minds that matter most. But of course, our minds and our bodies aren't separate. And actually, the body gives you kind of lots of clues and lots of possibilities, lots of things to try. But it's interesting, just because it's your body doesn't mean that you necessarily even notice it, let alone pay attention to it. So the encouragement there is to actually pay attention to the physical sensations that you're having, to take them seriously and to work with them.
And do you believe that it is the kind of thing where it is a lifestyle change and this is the way that you have to be for the rest of your life? Or is it an on and off switch? I can do this when I want to and I won't when I don't have to.
I'm going to have both, actually. I think you can decide that you can embrace this notion of conversation as something which is fundamental to human interaction, which brings us joy, which we're actually naturally disposed to and that you're already engaged in. And you don't have to do it everywhere all the time. There are certain times where you are just going through an agenda and you don't need to create anything new. There are certain times where you don't want to have a conversation. Lots of situations, perhaps, where you want to keep yourself separate and you don't want to engage. So I think it is a change of attitude fundamentally that you can then start to experiment with the rest of your life, but it's not a panacea. It's not something that you do uniformly everywhere in the same way, because each context is going to be different and require something different of you.
Well, Robert, if people want to read the book, it is Do Conversation, and the author is Robert Poynton. Robert, thank you very much.
The Anton Savage Show, Saturday.
With Nifty Business.
Saturday morning at 9. On News Talk.